Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland. Welcome to Rational in Portland. I'm your host, Kristen. I have Mariah Hudson in the studio. She is running for city council. Mariah is running for city council in District 2, which is North and Northeast Portland, right, Mariah?
It is, yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about your district, your neighborhoods that you've been canvassing.
So I live in Northeast and I'm former chair of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods. So I know a lot of these neighborhoods well.
What is the Northeast Coalition?
So it is the kind of umbrella organization that the city has supported for years. We have coalitions in each of the quadrants that supports our neighborhood associations, also does fiscal sponsorship for small businesses, and basically works with neighbors to engage them civically and solve problems with the city oftentimes.
And did you have like a specific role on there? You were a member?
Yeah, so I was a member, I was vice chair, and then I was chair for several years. And during that time, we did some really great things I'm proud of, like opening the Walnut Park Shelter. That's on the corner of MLK and Killingsworth. And that was opened by the county and Transition Projects. It provides 72 beds a night, a low barrier shelter. And what we did as a coalition is work with neighbors and local businesses and the city, Mingus Maps at the time with that office, to do site design and to look at environmental design and make sure that that was well situated, that there were agreements with neighbors to make that shelter successful. That's the kind of thing I love about the neighborhoods that I think really can contribute to our relationship with the city.
How do you do that? How do you make those successful? Because obviously we hear these stories all the time about low barrier, no barrier shelters, which my understanding means you don't have to be sober. Is that your understanding? Is that what, how does this shelter work?
That's right. You don't have to be sober. You can't be actively using in a shelter. You can also bring your pets. And for a lot of people, that reduces the barrier to coming inside. The hope is that by being inside and being in contact with people like social workers, getting the services, that people will choose a pathway to housing and recovery and get connected with resources.
And so what is the key to making sure that low barrier or no barrier shelters comply? Because we hear all the time, I mean, at least I have at city council meetings or when I go to testify, I hear neighbors come in and talk to Dan Ryan about who's the commissioner in charge of these things now, is my understanding, and talk to him about violations of what they understood to be good neighbor agreements. Chaos in their neighborhood, people selling drugs, illegal activity going on, maybe not within the shelter, but in and around it, which starts to impact their neighborhood. So to put together a successful low barrier, like your example, successful low barrier shelter where you don't have to be sober, you can't do drugs at the shelter, but you don't have to be sober. How do you do that? What is the key to that?
Well, I think it's three things, and whether it's a shelter or a bottle drop, it's really having the right. It's really about having the right site, looking at a place, a Walnut Park shelter. It was in a building with space, a little bit of space around it. It also has transportation. And I think that's a key to getting people to, you know, where they're going to be if they're not during the day. That's not a 24/7 space. So it's that in part. I think it's also an ongoing relationship with the neighbors, and that has to do with the provider and holding those providers accountable that they are managing not just the interior of the building and what happens going on there, but around the building. So it's that combination. And frankly, it's also about having public safety available and on our streets to manage, you know, things like drug dealing that are happening. You know, if we know that's happening near bottle drops, then let's also make sure they're in the right space for that, but having public safety to focus and shut down on our narcotics dealing.
But how do we do that? Because last I heard from a meeting with Commander Dobson at PPB, who, I mean, I think he could retire if he wanted to, the last time I talked to him. So that would have been what, last spring? We were 49th out of 50th in the country for police per capita. How do you staff things like that without police?
Well, I'll just take it as a perspective of a mom here. Yeah, I have a 13-year-old who rides a TriMet bus, just a stop or two, to take his tuba to Beaumont Middle School, where he goes to school. And I think about safety on that street level every day when I know that my son is walking to the bus stop and is going to be riding a TriMet bus to school. What's he going to encounter? You know, and it's not just my child; it's other children and it's seniors throughout the city. And ensuring we have that street level collaboration. So to your ask around how do we staff appropriately, I think we do staff appropriately. We fund appropriately. And that means, you know, the staffing, it means the resources, it means the training. And Portland Police are a part of that. So is Portland Street Response, if that is effective as well. I think that they could work in collaboration if Portland...
Part of the problem is they can't do anything, is my understanding from Aaron Schmaltz, who's the police union president.
Yeah.
Which is why he's trying to introduce these bills to strengthen them, because the police want help, but there's no empowerment to get it.
Well, I can say with things like Portland Street Response, what I really want to see as a potential council member here is that they are given the ability to voluntarily transport people.
Yes, that's right. Which they can't do right now.
Right now, I had somebody who I thought was potentially overdosing a couple doors down from me at 7 a.m. when my kids, you know, there were kids out there getting a bus ready to go to school. There's somebody I encounter while I'm out running. I called. It was before the hours when Portland Street Response could respond. And, you know, then the choices are, do we send a police car? Do we send somebody to an emergency room? You know, we've got to have a third space. And I feel like Portland Street Response, if they're staffed, you know, if they're around the clock, if they have the ability to voluntarily transport people, and if there's a place to take them to.
Right. I mean, that's the other issue, right?
Yeah.
There's so many moving parts here.
There are a lot.
So, I mean, we've talked about this on this show before, but yeah, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know. As far as I know, there's only 3 detoxes in Multnomah County. There was one opened up right before Measure 110 was reformed. There's 4 Health and Hoop. There's Hooper Detox, I think. I think those are the 3. But that's all I know about. And I know there's always a line.
Yeah.
There's not enough beds. And those are people who want help. So we're struggling with that. We're struggling with public safety numbers. And yet you all still managed to open up this successful low barrier shelter. And I'm dying to know how you did it. How do you keep on top of things when there are so many areas in the system that are not... That have enormous cracks.
Yeah. Well, I'll say, going back to the sobering issue, I just testified at the county a couple of weeks ago on our desperate need for a sobering center in
Thank
addition
you.
To detox. I think there's a really smart plan from Julie Brim Edwards' office that should be moved forward immediately. I can tell you, being in healthcare.
What is the plan? Can you let our listeners know in case they don't know it?
Yeah. So the plan is to essentially open a sobering center. I think we actually need 4, you know, in the quadrants of the city.
Yeah.
But to get the beds that we need so people can get into recovery, because you need that intermediate space.
And she's not saying open it somewhere specific. She's saying we need to direct funds to do this.
It's a get it done.
Yeah.
And it's a get it done. You know, it should have been in 2019.
That's 100%. I mean, if we're going to talk about a fentanyl emergency, it seems like that would be at the top of the list.
Absolutely. But I think the piece that we want to talk about here is really about vertical alignment between our city and our county and state funding and our providers. We need that sense of alignment. That's something that I've actually worked on at OHSU. You know, being in a leadership and in a communications role there, we had to do that kind of alignment during the pandemic. And I think that's a critical thing that we bring to the city. So it's working with leaders across and in the county. And I think we're going to get some new leadership there as well with the elections coming here.
But I am still just dying to know, because every neighborhood wants, I think most Portland neighborhoods, they want a shelter. They're afraid to do it. If somebody reached out to you and said, how do I do this, Mariah, how would I do this correctly in my neighborhood? What would you tell them? Given all the challenges we currently face and knowing that, you know, we need to elect somebody with a plan. It sounds like you certainly seem to have those. In the meantime, how do we do what your neighborhood did?
Well, the county had selected the space and worked with Transition Projects. That was the provider that was going in there. And we were brought in, you know, as first alerted to me by very concerned neighbors. And in fact, a brand new business that had just opened across the street and that said, oh, my sure. God, you know, what is going to happen with our foot traffic? What is going to happen with our clientele here? And it hasn't been a negative impact, is my understanding. It's been largely successful. You can see that there's not a lot of crime, you know, and mapped out in the area in the years since it's opened. It was that working together, and it really was a service at the time the city provided around, you know, kind of looking at the environmental design and ensuring that it was the right space.
Yeah, I don't know if the city still does that, but so it sounds like a lot of it is about the provider in the space.
A lot of it is about the provider in the space. And, you know, we've seen the success metrics such as they've been measured, and I would love to see a lot more of that for anybody who's funded through the joint office.
I haven't seen any success metrics.
Well,
what are they?
I mean, it would be placement, long-term placement in housing and long-term success in housing. It used to be that, a moderately successful shelter would have a 40-45% long-term placement rate. And now we're down to, last year I saw it was 17%. That's abysmal. We can do better.
Where can you find this information? Who releases it? The provider, the county?
So I believe I'm drawing that on a PSU report, but I will get back to you and make sure you can link that for listeners.
Because, I mean, I think that's one of the problems in my mind is that there's no transparency around any of this. You know, and a lot of the time the county will say, we house this many people. And then the auditor comes back and says, no, you didn't. And so what would be great is if we could just know facts. Like everybody, Sharon and Julia keep talking about these dashboards that we could just go to. And look anytime we want, you know, hotel style software or something.
Absolutely.
And see where our tax dollars are going and if it's working.
Well, I work at a hospital system, and I can tell you we have mission control, essentially is what we call it there. We watch the metrics, you know, there's real data reported. You know, I know from this again, some of it's in the county's purview as much as, or more than the city. But in terms of tracking those beds, which we absolutely need to be doing, you know, you can build that into contracts. So as these contracts renew with providers every 6 months, you can step that in. I actually have a plan, you know, for how we could do that shared on my website.
Oh, that's great. And tell us your website. I'll link to it in the show notes, but tell us your website.
It's mariahforportland.com. That's me.
It's the four a number.
It is F-O-R, Mariah for Portland. Yeah.
And so I'm going to link to that. I'm going to link to your social. Can you tell us a little bit about how are you going to attempt to bridge this gap between the city and the county? Because we know that based on the charter, the county deals with so many of these things that we're talking about, homelessness, addiction, mental illness. This is the purview of the county. And if you're running for city council, how do you work with the county to improve your city?
Well, I can tell you how I've done this in other roles and what I bring here. I've been a legislative advocate before. That's meant working with both sides of the aisle to get legislation passed and, in fact, to fight big insurers to get things like maternal mental health coverage. So that is really bringing people together. It's relationships. I will say also working in healthcare during the COVID crisis, we really had to come together and work with state agencies, work with the county, work with our competitors. And I was a core part of that communications to stand up vaccine clinics to get, you know, 800,000 vaccines out in a very short period of time. We did that. So it's about alignment, and it's going to be relationships. I'm a big believer being a neighborhood person and being out there and talking to people and having those open doors, open forums. I'd like to think I could have a not entirely empty office, but be out in the community a lot as a council person working and interfacing with residents.
how do you align? How do you get the county to align? Because they haven't been. I mean, they've been absent, in my opinion, on these issues for a long time. And I think those are the kind of things that Julie Abram Edwards and Sharon Myron are trying to address and talk about. They don't have a majority yet. You know, maybe they will after these next elections. Maybe they'll get some people on the county commission who will vote their way on some of this. But I mean, currently the focus seems to be on harm reduction, as in things like needles and a lot of needles in the budget for 2025. And yeah, I mean, I didn't see a lot about dealing with Measure 110 reform, or I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything in Mike Schmidt's budget, in the DA's budget. I didn't see anything in the county budget. And in the budget hearings, what I was hearing from Sharon and Julia is, where is the money for dealing with actual treatment? Like, as in getting sober being the goal. Do you, as if that's a weird thing to say, which is, it's so crazy, but that's just where we're at. And so how do you bridge that? It's what seems to me to be some kind of ideological divide.
Yeah. Well, first, let me say getting sober might sound weird, but if you said getting well, how many people would agree with that? You know, and we don't just need harm reduction. It's absolutely a both and. In terms of getting that county-city alignment, we do have, you know, the council does have a leverage point, and that's the budget.
Yeah.
We do not have to renew our agreement with the joint office.
No, we don't.
And I know that the current council decided to do that this year, but we don't have to continue that if we're not seeing the outcomes and the metrics. We can pull back that funding, and that's a very powerful tool.
Yeah, and I think Dan Ryan and Mingus Maps voted to keep it back, is my understanding, or at least to just knock it off with that. Are you saying that if you're going to work on these conversations, but if you're not seeing movement, that's a tool you're not afraid to use if you need to?
That's correct. I think we need to have that as an option on the table of pulling out of the joint office if it's just simply we're not seeing the outcomes that we know we need.
Yeah, that's the Joint Office of Homeless Services is what Mariah is referring to. And it's really, according to Sharon Myron, it's just that the city, right, you can go back to and listen to any of her episodes, the city just writes a blank check, basically, and hands it over to the county, and the county does what they want with it. And one, we don't have to write them a check. I mean, there's no obligation for us to do that. So I appreciate your, I think it takes some kind of bravery to, it must, because the majority did not vote to do that. So I think it takes some bravery to say what you just said. Tell me a little bit about why you're running for city council.
Well, to your last point, I'm not sure if it's bravery, but I chair a couple of budget committees for Portland Public Schools and for the Portland Transportation Bureau.
I think that sounds pretty brave.
Well, I tend to be a behind the scenes person, sometimes a little bit behind the spreadsheet, but budgets are where we really see our priorities enacted or not. And so with Portland Public Schools in particular, I've been a voice and pulled that committee around really supporting our students and our teachers and asking for, you know, giving recommendations to the board on, you know, more support in classrooms, on family and community supports, and on maintenance. That's been another theme on the Portland Bureau of Transportation, focusing on maintaining our roads. Because frankly, whether you're a cyclist or a walker or a driver, we all need pavement that's safe.
Yeah, it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously you work in healthcare. You talked a little bit about how your healthcare role translates into what you're looking to do at city council. What, tell me a little bit about your career and how you got started in that.
Well, one of the things I bring from healthcare is a sense of urgency. When we had the COVID crisis, that was the last time that Portland treated a crisis like an actual emergency. And when I look around on our streets, whether it's homelessness or whether it's addiction, or even some of the impending budget things that are going to be a crisis in the years to come if we don't address them, we need to treat those like an emergency. And what we do in healthcare is we pivot and we focus and we get outcomes. We're constantly measuring, you know, is this better for patients? Is this getting us the outcomes that we need? In terms of my background, I actually come from a teaching background. I was a former sustainability officer for years, a pioneering sustainability officer. I've worked as an advocate with the legislature and then now in communications, because I feel like that's where I am at a great organization and it's a great place where I've been able to make a difference.
What's a sustainability officer? I don't even know.
So I worked at San Diego State University before I moved back to Portland for about 7 years, leading sustainability efforts. That was everything from curriculum to community and government collaborations, sometimes with our utilities as well, and implementing green projects that, you know, saved $5 million over 3 years to, you know, green our energy there with solar and other things.
What was the impetus for you to run for city council? What did you have some moment where you realized you were going to do it? And was there something, a cause behind that moment or some event?
Well, the cause behind the moment is my children and everyone's children and our neighbors. Our neighbors who I see suffering from lack of city services, from the broken pieces in our system. When you want to help someone who's on the street and not have a place to put them or to help them go, to just things like frustration with permitting. I'm personally dealing with that right now.
Tell us a little bit about permitting and like what it is that you would change. I was just at the Progresso Latino mayoral debate last night and Renee Gonzalez was talking about how he was going to change the way permitting works in the city of Portland to some applause, which it didn't surprise me. And I'm really curious about what you think is broken and what you can do.
Well, my personal experience here is, you know, extreme weather is something that we know is going to keep happening here in Portland. And with the ice storm in right. January, I had an enormous Douglas fir tree. It had been checked out by an arborist within the past couple of years, but it was blown over and crushed my garage, my neighbor's garage, the next neighbor's garage. It was enormous. We were very fortunate. It didn't kill anybody or damage a home. But what happened is, you know, we got the tree off and now we have... It's just simply repairing garages. I mean, it's a big hole, don't get me wrong. But I've had to go to three different bureaus to work through permits. I've had to bring in an architect and a structural. We're just talking about repairing garages here. And you know what? It's September. I've been working on this since February. But the delays in the system.
So all these garages are still in a state of disrepair?
That's right. But to me, it just symbolizes something that we can pull together, right?
I mean, thank God it wasn't your house.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's a historic district there, too, so there's a little bit of an overlay and some extra work.
There shouldn't be that much, though.
It should be predictable. You know, somebody like me, I have 3 degrees, should be able to go look at a website, should be able to go look at a policy or call one person and find out what the process is, what the approximate timeline is. You know, I understand we have to have permitting for electrical. We need things well built. But come on here. We need predictability in the system. And that's what I hear a lot from people who are building affordable housing, from people who are trying to build multifamily.
What are your 3 degrees? I'm so curious about this.
So I have a bachelor's from the University of Oregon in English. I have a master's in American Studies and Economics from the University of Dallas. That's where politics and economics come together. I'm that kind of nerd. And then I worked on a PhD for a bit at Ohio State in history and public health.
What caused you to push the hold button on the PhD? I mean, I know I've heard horror stories. I don't know. I don't actually know, but I have heard horror stories about PhDs, thesis issues and getting your professor to pay attention and things like that. But what was it for you? Was it like a practical reason or was it?
Well, Kristen, I love teaching. I've had some really great opportunities while I was in my program and got a Carnegie Fellowship on wow. teaching effectiveness while I was there. But what it was for me is watching the issues that my students were dealing with, from housing to hunger, and wanting to have, you know, wow. not just a research around community and public health issues.
Your college students.
But also, oh yeah, I mean, I had... I remember well a student, Jackie, who came in really tired every morning, 8 a.m., and I thought, oh, poor partier maybe. No, she had been up with her child and worked a swing shift, and she often came to class hungry. and was just struggling there. And I found this out one day when she brought her child. So for me, it was that desire to be active and to change policy. And that's where I started working in sustainability and with the legislature to change legislation and, you know, improve lives for women and for children in particular.
What if anything, is your top priority if you were to be elected?
Well, my top priority is to revitalize Portland, is to restart our growth and our economic development. A big piece of that has to be safety, and it's safety in our neighborhoods. There were some really basic things that we need to do, but, you know, delivering on services, ensuring that our public spaces are safe. But we need to get our economic engine going and growing again. That's Portland's future.
So starting with your first example, how do we make sure that public safety is improved and things are safer?
Well, we need to regulate camping in a real way. That has to be, yeah. And I want, you know, Portlanders, we're compassionate. We need to operationalize those pieces, though. I have a homeless camp that's on and off right next to my office. And
I have a couple of those, too.
Yeah. You know, it's our camps and our RVs. We feel those throughout the neighborhood. They move around. I was just at Delta Park with my son, which has changed a lot. And you can see the impact that that's had on that area.
Yeah. I mean, I don't recommend that you, that anybody just go on out there. But if you were really dying to know what things look like when you leave it alone for a long time, that's what it looks like. Delta Park. And how do we clean up places like Delta Park? I mean, where to start?
Well, we need that focus. We're going to have under the new government, the Portland Solutions. And we need to give them, the mayor and the city administrator need to give them the authority to go in and clean up trash, to give people places to go, to help them with their belongings, to help them with their pets. And give, you know, we have options, task sites. I think, again, as you've mentioned, tracking our availability for beds gives people that option to go there.
You also talked about economics. What do we do? I am dying to know this as a small business owner.
Yeah.
What do we do to attract business to Portland? What do we do? Because right now it's nothing but, I mean, from my perspective, and I think a lot of maybe small businesses aren't suffering from this, but from my perspective, it's a lot of taxes and not a lot of return. There's very little incentive to do anything around here.
Well, that value proposition is important. I mean, not just for businesses, but also for families. We know that we've lost some population here in Portland. I want to see that reverse.
$1 billion in tax revenue.
Yeah, and for our long-term sustainable future as a city to be able to deliver and provide the services to keep our roads in good repair, we need that growth and that economic engine here. I'm going to say it's not just in downtown. In my district, is Lloyd, is Hollywood, you know.
Lloyd is tough, yeah. I'm sorry, keep going. What else is in your district? Were you going to say St. John's?
I mean, St. John's, there's thriving communities in all parts of these. But when I look at Northeast Broadway, I bike that pretty often around there, and I try to visit those businesses often. I just had a friend who opened a business there, actually. I think, why couldn't that be 23rd? Why couldn't that be? We need that, but we also need, you know, the larger vision and the investment there. Lloyd is ripe for, mixed use and for building multifamily and having that be, it's right on transit. It absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. Are they doing something? Did I read this? Are they doing something with that space?
There's been a lot of conversation about whether to put in a concert venue, about different projects there. I haven't heard a finalized.
Yeah. I mean, how do we actually do the revitalization? Like, how do we get businesses to be interested in coming here again? What do we need to do?
Well, there's three things. I mean, one of them is we need to demonstrate and communicate that it is safe and welcoming to do business here. I would love to see Prosper Portland be the sort of outreach and really robust recruitment arm for businesses.
I think it used to be. Yeah.
I've lived in other cities, including Cleveland, that's really seen their downtown come back.
Right.
for Cleveland, they had some bigger industries and, you know, they put in some big projects, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, other things like that. I don't know that that's the answer for Portland. What I want to do is listen to our business community, because I think the people that are closest to it can help give us the best information. And what I hear is that it's hard to do business in Portland and we need to make it easier.
I mean, nobody seems to talk about it in any kind of complimentary way, for one thing. I mean, that's sounds like you'll do that differently. I think that's helpful.
Yeah. Portland is an incredible place. I mean, I chose to raise my kids here because I love our neighborhoods, the diversity of, you know, each neighborhood. And, you know, we have things like the Green Loop coming, which is it's already designed and planned, but it's not activated at this point. It's a pedestrian and bike friendly loop through the city. That'll include the OMSI district. It includes downtown. It includes the East Side. And that's the sort of thing where if we have activated plazas, people outside, that's a new vision for our city that I think will really draw people.
Talk a little bit more about what you're seeing in your neighborhood in particular. I mean, do you find that your neighbors are talking about things that maybe other Portlanders aren't struggling with? Because one thing that I think is interesting is how these districts are, I mean, I think a lot of them are, four is east and west, which is tricky, but I think they're all pretty different and they're all having different, at least they feel like they're having different issues, which is why I think we want a geographically responsible commissioners. What kinds of things do you hear from your neighbors?
Well, I'm out there knocking doors, so I hear from my neighbors quite a lot. I'm out there 4 or 5 days a week whenever I can. Also, I know as former neighborhood coalition chair, people are concerned, I mean, with the very local issues, whether it's, you know, how Greenway is being put in their neighborhood or bottle drop. Certainly we hear a lot about that, or positive things as well. When I'm at the doors, the themes that I hear that probably I'm going to guess across the city, one is safety, service delivery. You know, are we going to have first responders there when we need them? We feel like they're, you know, these response times are too long. The other thing I hear, and I hear this in wealthier neighborhoods and in, you know, less prosperous neighborhoods, is around affordability. And I feel that pretty deeply as a solo parent and breadwinner.
Talk a little bit about what you're hearing about affordability. I mean, I hear a lot about housing affordability, but are you hearing about affordability generally in regard to all sorts of things, or is this specific to housing?
It's not specific to housing, although housing is, you know, the largest portion of a lot of people's budgets. I am like, you know, about 45% of my district who spend more than half of their income on housing.
Yeah.
And when you have, you know, that much of your budget dedicated to housing, you know, there's less for other things and it can affect financial stability. You know, your rent goes up, you feel that more than other people. No, but people are also worried about, you know, the costs with the city, rising taxes. And, you know, one of the things I ask at the doors is if you felt like your taxes were being well used, if you felt like, you know, there was, you know, cleanup of public spaces, your parks were what you want them to be.
Great schools. Safety,
great schools. Would you be upset about the tax rate? And a lot of times,
no.
You know, Portlanders, we're willing to pay. We're willing to pay for it. But we want to see the services delivered that make it, you know, livable here.
Yeah. How do you plan to address something like affordability?
Well, I'm going to go back to that being a budgetary and actually, you know, focus in economics and, you know, years of managing public budgets is we really need to take a fine eye to where we're focusing our money. And this is around how we're going to afford things like more public safety or, you know, other projects and priorities that we have for the city. I can say as chair of PBOT's budget committee, there's not a lot more room to cut things like central services, IT or HR. There may be some consolidation, but a lot of that is has been kind of used up through past budget cuts. What I really want to see us look at as a city are the what I'll call sometimes platinum solutions that we decide or planners and the council have decided that they're going to pursue. So things like the Bull Run Water Project, you know, they chose the highest end solution on that, which does provide us better fire protection.
What I actually don't even know. What is that?
So the Bull Run Water Project, that's basically protecting and covering and preparing our water supply for the future coming from Mount Hood. But the way that that project was determined and, the solution that they chose was the most expensive one. So we spend a huge portion of our city budget on the Water Bureau. And you're also seeing it in your water rates.
Yes.
They've gone up.
They're always going up. Yeah.
Right. And I think we need to look very carefully at anything new. I've been one of a few candidates who said, I don't want to see new taxes and fees added on. This past year, the Bureau of Transportation considered bringing to council a road use fee. Now, it's true that 30 other cities, I believe, in Oregon have a, quote, road use fee.
That a toll? What is that?
Yeah, it would be a fee added on to your water bill, because a water bill is a way to pass things through to consumers.
Nobody can tolerate a higher water bill. I don't know anybody who thinks that's affordable.
I talked to a neighbor last night who says she has, a 1,500 square foot house, not a huge lot, and she has a $1,200 water bill.
Yeah.
That shocked her. And I thought, not many people can afford that. That is really expensive. Yeah. So adding on $6 for a road use fee, it might be a cup of coffee for some people, but for others, especially those on fixed incomes, I think we really need to look at where we're spending our money first. Focus on our maintenance, focus on our first service delivery first before, more new nice to have things.
How are you going to dig into that? Because I think there's a huge lack of transparency. None of us know where money is going. And if you go to these city council meetings, it is wild how many hundreds of thousands, hundreds of millions blow out the door within an hour. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. My head would explode. And it's vote after vote after vote after vote for tons of money. And it's just flying out to all sorts of, it's nonprofits. It's Prosper Portland. It's all these projects. How do you start? I mean, I don't even know where you'd start. I can't imagine. It must be so overwhelming. How do you dig into this?
Well, Portland Public Schools has two budget books, and this is their transparency document. It's over 500 pages between the two budget books.
Yeah, I believe that.
I got to say, I spend a lot of time reading that. It's also understanding and working with the bureau administrators and the deputy administrators to see what's coming forward, to unpack that. I would bring a very careful eye to what those expenditures are, asking for metrics to show that if we're spending, as we have, $193 million since 2017 on Vision Zero, that we're reducing traffic deaths, or that we have, I think we've done some really great projects, by the way, out of Vision Zero. It's not something I want to get rid of. I actually want our roads to be safer. But to make sure that where we're investing that money is returning what we're expecting.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about that you feel like listeners should know about you?
One thing I'd just like to share is how important our neighborhoods and our neighborhood associations and our community organizations have been. Having been the former chair of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, I know how powerful it can be to bring people together around a table and create consensus, work with the city on a policy. We helped inform things like the residential infill plan, which help structure what we can do with zoning, where people can build, how we can open up more land, or what's appropriate for housing. A couple of things I would love to work on, as a parent myself, I've spent a lot of money and had challenges getting my kids into preschool.
Oh my gosh.
And I won't lean into the preschool for all right
now. Everybody agrees with
that. One of the things for people, I have a friend who's a provider, wants is to be able to offer the same number of slots at her residential preschool. She has it in the house as you could at a commercial preschool. She actually has a green space outside, but right now the zoning doesn't permit for that. I think there's things like that that we can do, but you have to work with the neighborhoods and have that come in, kind of community input. So that's what excites me about the council, is the opportunity to engage with our residents and know what the things are that we need to bring up to council. And it is different across the districts.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I appreciate you getting to know your constituents and having an understanding of their concerns. Mariah Hudson, running for Portland City Council District 2 in North and Northeast Portland. Thank you so much.
Kristen, thank you so much for having me.